Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Well, as you know, Congressman Peter King of Long Island is the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee in the House, and he held a hearing yesterday that was extremely controversial on homegrown terrorism. It was officially called the extent of radicalization in the Muslim community in the United States. I may be missing by a word or two here. And the response from that community and people disagreed extremely strongly as to whether this was a serious response to the homegrown terrorism threat. Of course, there is some homegrown terrorism threat in the United States, or whether it was political theater meant to demonize a community. There were actually very few witnesses. We're going to play an extended excerpt from each of two. And we have three reactions that we will get, including WNYC's Arun Venugopal, who was in the hearing room yesterday and did a live blog throughout the day. Central question, did we learn anything yesterday? And we can put that open to you as well. If you watch the hearing, if you follow this in the media, folks, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Did you learn anything that you didn't already know or believe you knew before the hearings that Peter King held yesterday, 212-433-9692. One of his central witnesses was a Dr. Zudi Jasser, president and founder of a group called the American Islamic Forum for Democracy. And he is very much a critic of Muslim communities in the United States and community leaders in particular, though he is an American Muslim himself. Let's play about a minute of Dr. Jasser's testimony.
Let me also state clearly that it is a problem that we can only solve. Christians, Jews, non-Muslims cannot solve Muslim radicalization. So yes, there may be other types of violent extremism, but that cannot be solved by non-Muslims. So we can close our eyes and pretend it doesn't exist. We can call everybody a bigot or an Islamophobe if they even talk about it, but you're not going to solve the problem, and the problem is increasing exponentially. What I hope that we can discuss is get beyond this blind concept of violent extremism. It is a final step, but radicalization is a continuum. Cooperation is a continuum. I've personally never known a Muslim that wouldn't report somebody about to blow something up or commit an act of violence. But that's a final step on a continuum of radicalization. I believe there are small elements, but significant elements of ideology within our community that is radicalizing based on the identification, the lack of identification, and the separatism and the disenfranchisement of certain Muslims from this society that makes them not bond, makes them not trust the government, makes them distrust the FBI, and creates a culture of a lack of cooperation. That's what we need your help in solving.
Dr. Zudi Jasser, president and founder of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy, at hearings on Muslim-American radicalization held in the House Homeland Security Committee yesterday. With me now, Arun Venugopal, WNYC's Arun Venugopal, who is at the hearing yesterday. Ahmad Nasser, detective and Muslim Community Affairs representative for the NYPD. And Faiza Patel, co-director of the Liberty and National Security Project for the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU. Welcome, all of you. Good morning.
Hi, Brian.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Arun, the hearing, as I said, and correct me if I'm off by a word or two, was called The Extent of Muslim Radicalization in America and the Community's Response to It. Let's take each of those things. Did Congressman King use witnesses to try and demonstrate the extent of radicalization?
Well, I think you're kind of getting at one of the essential problems with the hearing, as some people saw it yesterday. He did use two key witnesses who have seen firsthand as people that they knew. One of them was a Somali-American gentleman, and the other is a man from Tennessee who both saw, one of them saw their son become radicalized, and the other saw a nephew, the one from Somalia, who saw his nephew and others who eventually moved off to Somalia to become part of some jihadi efforts. The other one, who I think his name is Carlos, was a son of the man from Tennessee. he saw his son became radicalized after converting to Islam. It really troubled him for a while. Next thing he knows, he's going off, and he's shot two U.S. Army recruiters, one of whom died. For both of them, the response was, I guess, perhaps on the newsier side of the event, which is that it was a leadership of the Muslim American community which really tried to pressure them not to come out with these revelations to expose them, especially with the man from Somalia, Mr. Behe. He said that when he turned to the mosque leadership and to groups like CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, that they really tried to get him to sort of stifle the story, saying they pressured him, saying that it would discredit the community, it would really hurt the larger American Muslim community, and that the FBI didn't really have his interests at heart. So this was, I guess, sort of the hearings, perhaps, the central focus was on how the American Muslim leadership is not really doing its job. It's really running contrary to what the efforts of law enforcement officials. And something, of course, there was pushback from other people on the committee, but that was really what King himself, Chairman King, was really trying to get at here.
So Faiza Patel, co-director of the Liberty and National Security Project for the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, how do you put some stories like those in context? I mean, assuming they're true, they are individual anecdotes. You did a report, Rethinking Radicalization. How do we extrapolate from stories like that to actually answer the question and come up with some, numbers or meaningful patterns or something like that that does justice to the title of the hearing, The Extent of Muslim Radicalization?
Well, I think that's a great question, Brian. I mean, the very fact that Chairman King had only two anecdotes presented at the hearing demonstrates that he wasn't really talking about the extent of radicalization in the Muslim community. Because if you want to talk about this issue, which is a global issue in the sense that you want to have an overview of what is the actual extent of the radicalization and should we be worried about it, then you need to look at, how many cases we've had over the last decade. And the statistics on that are that we've had cases of homegrown terrorism, but the number is low. So obviously that's not very beneficial to stirring up fear about this issue, and I guess that's why two anecdotes were chosen. And I think the second point, which is really important and which is underlying some of the things that came out both in Dr. Jasser's testimony and in the testimony of these two individual witnesses, is this idea that there is, as Dr. Jasser put it, a continuum of radicalization and a continuum of cooperation. And I think it's really important to think about those ideas because one of the things that our report demonstrates is that all of the empirical research shows that there's no continuum of radicalization that you can rely on to predict violence. And that's the theory that's underlying much of what went on yesterday.
And Peter King had said, in January, quote, I determined early on that to make the most meaningful impact, the lead witnesses would be Muslims who believe their community is being radicalized and that Muslim leaders are not sufficiently cooperating with law enforcement. So he pretty much put it on the table in advance that there would be some theater to this to raise the issue, to make sure that people understood at least what the charge is. Detective Nasser, Muslim Community Affairs Representative for the NYPD, could the hearing designed to fight radicalization have the effect of radicalizing young Muslims who see their government for the way Peter King led up to them, and conducted these hearings as being something that alienates them rather than mobilizes them?
Well, thank you for this opportunity to begin with. And unfortunately, I was not able to watch the hearings yesterday. However, what we've been doing with the NYPD, us, community affairs, and the outreach to the Muslim community, the mission for the NYPD, obviously, is to enhance that quality of life in the city in general by working with the community throughout the city, by working with new immigrant communities, community leaders within New York City, community-based organizations, the youth within the community. Our mission in New York City is to establish that relationship, and we have done a lot in building that bridge between the Muslim community and the New York City Police Department.
So let me ask you, because Congressman King complained about a lack of cooperation with police among the leaders of mosques and Muslim communities, stating or implying that this is a very prevalent problem. Do you find that in New York City?
I don't see that, but like I said, I've been doing community affairs, community outreach for the last 8 years in my career. And, you know, obviously you have to work with the community in order to have a better relation and positive relations. And every time I go out to the community, or for that matter, the police commissioner himself, you know, he go out to the community and meet with community leaders. We host events for the community. For example, we have the annual pre-Ramadan conference where community leaders are invited to come and sit down with the executive staff from the NYPD and exchange ideas and how to, you know, to work together and better relations. And I see there is a lot of cooperation as far as bringing the community together to work with the police department. My experience has been positive, and not to say that it's perfect, but we have a lot accomplished as far as community relations and working with the community to fight crimes, for that matter. If you look at the history, the police department has always been working with community, with the community to fight crimes. And we are able to reduce crimes by working with the community, and that goes across board. If we wanted to fight terrorism or anything, we have to work with the community.
I want to play another clip from the hearings, and this one comes from the other side. It wasn't a witness. This was one of the Democrats. Well, I guess he actually was serving as a witness as well as a member of Congress. He is one of the two Muslim members of Congress, Keith Ellison, a Democrat from Minnesota. And he got very, very emotional as he told the story of a 9/11 first responder from Queens, Muhammad Hamdani, who died on 9/11. Listen.
Let me close with a true story, but remember that it's only one of many American stories that could be told. Muhammad Salman Hamdani was a 23-year-old paramedic, a New York City police cadet, and Muslim American. He was one of those brave first responders who tragically lost his life in 9/11 terrorist attacks almost a decade ago. As the New York Times eulogized, he wanted to be seen as an all-American kid. He wore number 79 on the high school football team at Bayside, Queens, where he lived. He was called Sal by his friends. He became a research assistant at the Rockefeller University and drove an ambulance part-time. One Christmas, he sang Handel's Messiah in Queens. He saw all of the Star Wars movies. And it's well known that his new Honda was the one that read with the Young Jedi license plates. Mr. Hamdani bravely sacrificed his life to try to help others on 9/11. After the tragedy, some people tried to smear his character solely because of his Islamic faith. Some people spread false rumors and speculated that he was in league with the attackers because he was a Muslim. But it was only when his remains were identified that these lies were exposed. Muhammad Salman Hamdani was a fellow American who gave his life for other Americans. His life should not be identified as just a member of an ethnic group or just a member of a religion, but as an American who gave everything for his fellow Americans.
Congressman Keith Ellison, Democrat from Minnesota, one of the two Muslims in Congress, testifying emotionally at Peter King's hearing yesterday on Homeland Security and the radicalization of Muslims in America. WNYC's Arun Venugopal, you were in the hearing, and emotional as that is, and that it shows us that John Boehner is not the only member of the House who cries, what does that prove? Does that do anything to demonstrate, you know, to minimize the extent of radicalization or response of community leaders, even as it seems like Peter King didn't do much to prove the extent in his direction?
Well, I think that for Congressman Ellison, he was sort of using his stature in the community. That is, he's one, the first Muslim in Congress and one of only two Muslim members of Congress, essentially to kind of convey the emotional impact that these hearings themselves have had on the community and others who have really felt that, like, they're, I guess, operating from an unfair and maybe bigoted premise. So him, he was obviously trying to convey that Muslims can be patriotic and with that story, but at the same time, I think it was very clearly demonstrating he's been working against these hearings since the beginning. At the same time, realizing that he had to engage with the process rather than stand outside of it, and the fact is there were really there were plenty of people on the panel, Democratic members of Congress, who were challenging the premise of the hearings, but there were some obvious omissions from the witness stand, namely all the Muslim community groups which were not called to sort of, I guess, speak to the accusations against them, namely CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. So it was, I think, in many ways what people were saying was inappropriate or wrong about the hearings is not simply the premise of the hearings. They found it, their problem was with what they saw as Congressman King's, I guess, sort of cherry picking of witnesses. Although we had a couple of very compelling witnesses in the two men we spoke about earlier who have seen radicalization up front, it wasn't Congressman King who called Sheriff Lee Baca from the LAPD, LA County PD, to speak about cooperation between the community and law enforcement. It was the Democratic, the minority members of the committee. There were none of these major groups that could Muslim groups that could really speak to the accusations or really kind of give us a better sense of really why are they not cooperating if they're not cooperating, or if they are cooperating, how are they doing that? So I think that that was really the elephant in the room was really, you know, this group, CARE, as well as the other groups that were, I guess, by association, were supposedly not doing anything. And we couldn't really hear their defense of these, you know, against these allegations.
Faiza Patel from NYU and author of the report Rethinking Radicalization. What would you say about the extent of the problem? We've been deconstructing the hearings a lot, which is, I think, appropriate, but we know there is a problem. We know there's some kind of a problem. We know Times Square happened, or the attempt happened. We know Fort Hood happened, and, you know, we could go down a list. So what do you conclude about the extent of the problem?
These hearings told us anything about the extent of the problem.
But I'm asking you what you conclude from your report.
I think what we concluded in our report was that there are divergent views about the extent of the problem. You have, you know, some police departments and the NYPD and the FBI among them who have traditionally highlighted the extent of the domestic threat. And in contrast, the intelligence agencies, by and large, have focused on the threat of an attack from al-Qaeda, sort of driven from abroad rather than generated from within the United States. Now, this sort of assessment of the threat landscape seems to be changing in the last year or so, and that's one of the question marks that is out there as to are we seeing an increasing trend or not. And the most recent study, which came out from Duke University a couple of weeks ago, suggests that, you know, we had a spike of incidents in 2009, and that rate has gone back down to the normal rate of domestic terror incidents we've seen since 9/11. So we don't really know whether there's been an increase in incidents or whether we saw an aberration in 2009. And I think, you know, that is sort of the best assessment I can give you.
And isn't it legitimate of Peter King to hold some hearings specifically on the homeland terrorism threat from within the Muslim community? I mean, there is a global jihad out there led by al-Qaeda. They are trying to recruit Muslims in America and the rest of the world. It is kind of the signal national security threat that comes from terrorism today. It's not to say that there aren't right-wing extremist groups out there and other things, but this does rise to a different level, doesn't it?
It depends on what you mean by the threat. I mean, if you look at the number of attacks, then I think it's pretty much a toss-up, according to the statistics, as to whether or not, you know, the number of attacks from Muslims versus non-Muslim groups is, you know, not that far off from each other over the last 10 years. If you connect it to the broader sort of global movement, then yes, I can see why one would think that this was more of a threat. But, you know, the thing that disturbs me really is, as much as the fact of the hearings and as much as the downsides of focusing on a community that's so critical to our counterterrorism efforts and shining a spotlight on this community and treating them as suspect, all of those issues aside, I just wonder whether, you know, Congressman King, who started these hearings with the premise that there are too many mosques in the country and that 80% of the mosques in the country are extremist, and then set up a hearing which was very much one-sided to demonstrate a particular point of view without, as Aaron said, you know, having the major Muslim groups over there. That just seems to me the wrong way to go about it, even if you were going to go about it.
And Detective Nasser with the NYPD, Muslim Community Outreach Officer, before you go, what about that stat that Congressman King has used in the past, that radicalization is taking place at 80% of mosques in the United States? In your experience, going mosque to mosque around New York City for the NYPD, do you see anything approaching that?
Well, from my experience, as I said earlier, I have worked with the community. The community is very much working with us. Community is coming forward with information. For example, that vendor that was on 42nd Street where that attempted bombing, it was a Muslim person, you know, I think he's an African from West Africa. There is working relationship. What we're trying to establish is working with the community, and it has been working for us. As long as we bring the community in and not isolate the community, I think we'll do a better job. And that goes across the board. It's not just the Muslim community, any community, to work with the community. And in fact, I want to mention one thing we would be trying to do with the Muslim youth. We have been organizing a every summer for the, you know, we have a league for soccer, we have a league for cricket, among other programs that, you know, tower the youth, and especially the Muslim youth. So we're trying to work with every angle of the community, whether the youth or the community leaders and community-based organizations and houses of worship.
We have 15 seconds left. Does Peter King make it harder for you to do your job?
Certainly, when you work with the community, I don't think he's not in charge of me directly, so I'm kind of happy with that. I work directly with the community under the commissioner, police commissioner, Darren W. Kelly, who has been doing a wonderful job as far as outreaching the community. So to that extent, I'll leave it alone.
Ahmed Nasser, detective and Muslim community affairs representative for the NYPD. Faiza Patel, co-director of the Liberty and National Security Project for the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU. WNYC's Arun Venugopal, who was at the hearing yesterday. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll check in just a minute with the progress of the tsunami hitting the United States West Coast, apparently without much effect so far, but we will get the latest. And then David Brooks will join us. He has a fascinating new book called The Social Animal. Stay with us.